From Dog Works Training Centers, professional canine training centers in Denver, Colorado, and Anchorage, Alaska. This is Dog Works Radio, committed to families and their dogs to build lifelong and fulfilling relationships. Visit our website at dogworksradio.com. Dog Works Radio is part of Twine Group Media and syndicated worldwide on blogtalkradio.com. Now, here are your hosts, Robert and Michelle Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, hosting live from the KVRF studios in Palmer, Alaska. RadioFreePalmer.org is our live streaming site, and you can listen to all of our archive shows over on DogWorksRadio.com, as well as follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just search for Dog Works Radio there in the search bar. And this afternoon, we are talking to Rob Guttrow. He is an author calling in from the Washington, D.C. area. We're going to talk about his new book, Pets and the Afterlife. Rob, how's it going?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
So tell us about what's happening over in Washington, D.C. Is it 100 degrees? I remember it was every summer when I lived there when I was in high school.
Well, actually, the heat index is about 94 right now, and it's really humid, and we're actually expecting some severe thunderstorms to roll through here in the next couple hours.
You know, I am so glad to be away from that heat. Here it's about a top of about 65 degrees in the summer. It's well, of course, you got to deal with negative 30, but at least it's not that high humidity like you guys have there. I would literally melt these days if I moved back to the D.C. area.
Well, you know, we had a polar outbreak this winter, so we had some Alaska-like temperatures, and now we've got the other extreme.
Very good. So, Rob, tell us about yourself. We talked about the title of your book, but who are you and what are you all about?
Well, by trade, I'm a meteorologist, so talking about weather is one of my favorite things to do.
But, oh, my goodness, I didn't know. Okay.
Yes. So being a scientist, what I've done is I've incorporated science and logic in the books that I write. Conversely, I'm also a ghost investigator. I'm on an investigative team that does ghost investigations. And since I was a kid, I've always had the ability to hear them and see them and so forth. So I've coupled my meteorology, my science, with my gift, if you will, and I've written a couple of books about that.
Very cool. So when you say that you investigate ghosts, are we talking about all forms of ghosts? Of course, we're going to talk about dogs here in a minute, it being a dog show, but are you after people's ghosts as well?
Sure, whatever we run into. I've written a couple of books about my encounters with ghosts, and the latest book, Pets in the Afterlife, is, of course, about my experience with dogs and cats.
Yeah. You know, that's an interesting subject. I'm a huge thriller fan, horror fan, sci-fi fan, you know, the movies. And, you know, I've always been fascinated by that sort of paranormal activity. You know, you see so much stuff these days on cable TV of the poltergeists and, you know, haunted backyards and all this stuff. So how in the world did you get interested in something like this? And did people think, you know, I thought this guy was a scientist. I thought he was, you know, a very stuck in the mud type guy. You know, he wouldn't think about things like this.
Well, you know, you're right. A lot of scientists dismiss it, but I think there's a science behind everything. And basically, what I've come to find out is that the law of conservation of energy is basically the focal point of it all, because we've got a lot of energy inside of us, and it has to go somewhere after we die, and that includes dogs and cats. So what happens is that after we die, that energy, that physical energy within us, couples with our intelligence, our memories, and our personality, and we either stay here as a ghost or we cross over into heaven or Valhalla, whatever you want to call it, as a spirit. So that's the basic of it. It's all about energy.
All about energy. So is it a bad thing to be stuck on that, on one side or the other, at least in your opinion? You know, obviously you're out there studying to try to find out the folks that have left behind, so to speak, and haven't carried on towards that religious realm that a lot of folks think about. Do you think it's a good or bad one way or the other?
It's bad if you're kind of stuck here on Earth as a ghost, because people don't belong here. We need to cross over and join all the energies that flow through, you know, the universe or heaven or whatever you want to call it. So,
right.
So as a ghost investigator, we get people to go there, or pets. And I've run into both dogs and cats. And actually, I've even seen residual images of horses.
Wow, that's very interesting. You know, being a musher, we have 40 dogs at the house, and you know, evidently. Or obviously, all of those dogs will pass over at some point in the future, and it's one of the toughest things that happens to a pet owner. We become so close and so attached to our pets, and it becomes a very difficult passing for that pet to move on. And of course, a lot of folks talk about the Rainbow Bridge and how their dogs have crossed over and how we will reunite with them in heaven or doggy heaven or whatever you want to call it. When you're thinking about communicating with these dogs as a medium, or these cats or these pets, et cetera, are you doing it in the time before they pass over? Is it that kind of area of, okay, right when they've passed, before, like you said, the spirit moves on, or is it much, much later?
It's after they've passed. I'm not like a dog whisperer. I can actually only get messages from people and animals that passed away. So what's interesting is that I include a scientific explanation of how they're actually able to communicate. You know, being a musher, you know that dogs learn on a lot of different levels. And there's a lot of different levels of intelligence. There's instinctual intelligence. There's routine, there's game playing, there's emotional intelligence, they understand language. You know, pet owners will take their dog to obedience training, so they learn like children. Different barks mean different things, body language, facial signs. And you know, and the other thing I outlined too is that different dog breeds have different levels of intelligence. So,
of course.
And I cite Dr. Stanley Coren. Are you familiar with him?
Oh, yes, very much so.
Okay. So he, in his books, The Intelligence of Dogs and How Dogs Think, he cites that dogs have the intelligence of a 3 to 5-year-old child.
Right.
And, of course, some breeds are easier to train than others. You know, I have Weimaraner, and we have Dachshunds, and the Weimaraner is much easier to train than Dachshunds. I think because they want to be stubborn because they're smaller.
But, of course. Yeah. All of those little dogs are tough to train, no matter what breed it is.
That's true. So basically, they learn on a lot of different levels. And by learning through on these different levels, they're actually able to convey messages easier to us because they have that understanding of our language and our emotions. Just think about when you're feeling sick, your dog knows that you're sick, so they'll come up and curl up to you and pay attention to you.
Right. You know, it's an amazing gift. I am fascinated by canine behavior every day. Obviously, I've done this since I graduated college, over 20 years now, and I learn something new every day. And, you know, I've always been fascinated by what happens next to our pets. And, of course, that's what you do. That's what you wrote your book, what you have written this book about, Pets and the Afterlife. You know, I'm always curious. You always hear folks saying that the dogs know when it's time, obviously when it's time to pass away. And it's usually the humans that are interfering with that, trying to keep the old dog around a little bit longer, whether it be a dog with cancer or some other disability. But a lot of times you'll hear these folks say, oh, Max just knew it was time, but I just couldn't let go. What do you have to say about that?
Well, It is a, I mean, obviously it's the hardest decision you'll ever make, and it's one where you really have to sit down and outline all of the different conditions that the pet is experiencing. And that's something I actually wrote in the book. When we, our dog Sprite was 16 and a half years old last summer, and he was losing the ability to use his legs, he was going blind, he was going deaf, he had a serious heart murmur, and he developed kidney failure. And these were conditions that were worsening slowly. We knew that the time was coming. He wasn't in pain. We were assured that by the vet. But he was struggling. And we made the decision when he got a nosebleed, and the vet we took him to the emergency hospital said it was likely a tumor had ruptured in his nose, and he would have to be examined. He'd have to go be knocked out and examined, and we knew it was time. So my advice to everybody is that write down everything in an email to a friend. Send it to that friend, and then have that friend send it back to you the next day, and then read it as if you were a third party. And then you can make a careful decision. That's what I did. Actually, after Sprite passed, I did that because I was feeling guilt, as we always do.
Right.
And the friend emailed it back, and she said, if you read this again, you know you made the right decision.
Right. You know, that's what I really wanted to explore with you, Rob, is that way that we grieve for our pets. And I definitely want to talk a little bit about what does happen next. But how should we grieve? Obviously, you hear these same stories on the other side. Oh, he was just a pet. Oh, he was just a dog. He was just a cat. He was just a gerbil, whatever. Kind of get over it. And that's a tough thing to do. I still think about our dog, Aneke, one of the best sled dogs I've ever had in my career, and I still think about him every day. Obviously, our team is named after him. It's kind of his legacy, but his presence is always there. I don't know if it's kind of a ghostly presence or an afterlife presence, but I feel him all the time. How do you stand up to that when people just say, oh, you know, it's just a dog, it's just a cat, it's just a pet? In terms of grieving for that.
I totally disagree with the it's just a pet.
Right.
You know, every living thing is special, and what I've come to find out by talking to a lot of people is that sadly some belief systems, some religions have conveyed that pets have no soul, which is absolutely untrue. Every living thing has a soul, and pets have the ability to learn. I mean, I say this to people, if your 3-year-old son or daughter died and they had the same level of ability to understand you that your dog does, why wouldn't you grieve for them the same way?
Right.
You know, if you think about it, our pets, especially our dogs, a little more than cats because dogs require more training and so forth. Cats are more independent. But we do the same thing with our dogs that we do with our children. We take them to school. We teach them potty training. We love them when they're hurt. We doctor them. We take them to the doctor. We take them to school. We're proud of them when they're good with other dogs. Dogs can be looked at as children to a point. You know, we don't give birth to them certainly, but they behave similarly, especially when children are toddlers, like 1, 2, 3 years old. So, of course, we should grieve for them. They're not inanimate objects, and that truly does make me crazy, Rob.
It does me too. And you know, having so many dogs over the years, they're so special to us. You know, a lot of people say, "Oh, you're just a musher. You have 40 dogs. You don't even know their names." And you know, I know every one of their personalities, and every one of them have that special place in my heart. And I'm not necessarily one of those bleeding heart pet advocates that dresses up their dogs and does all that kind of stuff, but they do hold that special spot in our hearts, whether it's one or five or however many pets or dogs you have in your lives, you know, you have to have the ability to grieve. You have to be able to get over that. And it's not something that happens overnight. You know, it could be a grieving process that lasts a long time. Is that right?
Sure. You know, I had a puppy that was 6 months old that was killed in front of me in 2005 when his leash malfunctioned and opened. And I've never stopped grieving for him. I miss him every day.
Right.
And I've read studies, by the way, from the American Psychological Association that said that pet parents grieve harder and longer for the death of their pet than they do for a family member.
Wow. Wow, I did not know that. Why do you think that is? Is it because this is the way that they interact with us?
It's because they show us unconditional love. You know, I'm sure that everybody listening has a family member that is just not the nicest family member you could ask for. So,
right.
You know, most people would definitely grieve more for their cat or their dog than that one family member that, you know, is problematic.
Right, right. You know, my next question for you, Rob, is how do you think that this changes outside of the U.S., out of North America, out of, I don't know, Western Europe? You know, a lot of cultures treat their dogs differently than we do over here. They don't take them to school. They aren't in the house. They aren't part of the family, so to speak, even in very first world type countries like Germany, they aren't as attached to their dogs as we are here in the States. What have you learned in your research or in your talking to folks about how this whole grieving process and the way that we interact with our dogs is different throughout the world?
That's a really good question. It certainly does differ from country to country. And I was actually just conversing with a friend in Australia before I came on, and he's very emotionally connected to his dogs. But other countries look at dogs as either working animals or just companions. They don't have I think it's a matter of not understanding the true value and learning ability of a dog, the true companion nature of a dog. And sadly, I think some countries don't understand that. But fortunately, you know, I consider myself fortunate to live in a country where we do understand, you know, scientifically and behaviorally how important dogs are and how they can be as, you know, considered as our some canine children.
Right. So let's get into this afterlife stuff. You know, at least from my opinion, I had not had a chance to read your book. I only read the excerpts that you sent over. But usually there's two sides of the fence to this, and correct me if mm-hmm. I'm wrong here. There's usually the religious side and then the non-religious side about what's happening, whether they're going
– right.
People or dogs are going to heaven, and there's that whole religious side. And then the other side is we're just going into the ground and we're kind of becoming part of nature and, you know, the cycle of life type thing. When you talk about the afterlife, how can you best describe it? You had mentioned that they either cross over or they stay. What is another way to kind of teach folks that if they are ghosts, they're kind of here in limbo, but they possibly do cross over into something grander than they are in now, I guess, if you're thinking of heaven or Valhalla, as you mentioned, or paradise or whatever religion that you follow?
Yeah, and, you know, you don't need to be religious at all to believe in an afterlife. We can, you know, I even explain it scientifically because it's energy, and
right.
the energy can't be destroyed, only transformed. And if you look at if you look outside the Earth, for instance, energy is just streaming through the cosmos, just streaming through the universe, all forms of energy, X-rays, gamma rays, all kinds of things. So you don't need to believe in a god or a heaven even to understand that, you know, life continues afterward. And it doesn't matter what you believe in. But what's important is that you know that we go on in a different form afterward. Our bodies are just a shell here on Earth to learn lessons. And then we go on. So it really doesn't matter if you're religious or not.
Right. And you know, there's other types of beliefs where reincarnation comes into play and mm-hmm. those forms of beliefs as well. You know, oh, I think he was a person in his previous life. Look at the way he does things. You know, when you think of ghosts, Rob, we're talking to Rob Guttrow today. He is the author of Pets in the Afterlife, a brand new book. You can find out more about him on his Facebook page. If you can, tell us your Facebook page or your website, Rob.
You can actually find me on Facebook. Just look up Rob Guttrow, author, or Ghosts and Spirits Insights.
Very cool.
Or you can just go to Amazon.com. You can find me on Amazon.com.
No problem. And we're going to put all those links on the show page as well, so you can check it out as you're listening. So when people think of ghosts, Rob, they think of spirits kind of in chaos. You know, when you watch the shows or the movies or read the books, they're kind of a being in chaos. It's something that isn't quite right. They haven't quite left yet. What's your description of that ghost as a pet?
It's just basically that you're in kind of a limbo because you're here. When people decide to stay earthbound, they decide to stay earthbound for several reasons. For instance, they think that their family can't handle the grieving process. They don't want to leave their family, which is why a pet would stay behind as an earthbound ghost. They have unfinished business. They want to help their family, or they think that they don't deserve to go forth. But in terms of dogs and cats, it's mostly that they are very, very attached to their pet parent. But most dogs and cats do cross over because our relatives who have passed over are there to greet them and bring them over. And I have actually seen both my dogs from the other side that have crossed over. When my mom had passed away this past December, and I sensed my dad in the hospital room holding one of our dogs. We had a white poodle growing up, and that dog was in his arms. And actually, I got a call from a friend of mine who's another medium, and she said the same exact thing without even knowing what I had sensed. So our dogs are on the other side, and they're waiting for us. But what's interesting is the way that they communicate with us from the other side. And so if you want, I can give you some ideas about how they do that to give people hope, which is why I wrote the book.
Sure, exactly. That's what we're all about here on the show. What do they do? I mean, it's a very complex subject to get in a half an hour, of course, and I'm sure we could talk about this forever. But give us an example. What's happening? Are they those kind of shadowy figures that we think of as ghosts, kind of that transparent dog on the other side, so to speak? What are they saying to us? What are they trying to convey?
What they're trying to convey is that they can still come around us from time to time, and that it's the love that they have for you and you have for them that binds us together. And they don't stay with you after they pass. They just come and visit from time to time when they're needed, or birthdays and anniversaries are usually a time in which they come, just like people. But they convey their appearance in a lot of different ways. Sometimes you can see them visibly. I've talked to a lot of people who have heard nails on the floor, the jingle of a collar. They can influence you to walk a certain way to bump into a pet that resembles them, a doppelganger.
Hmm.
So that, you know, the first thing you do is you think, oh my gosh, that looks just like my dog. Well, that's because your dog is actually influencing you to go that way so that you can see them to know that your dog's spirit is still with you. They make noises. There's temperature changes. You know, if you watch those ghost shows, you know that when there's a cold spot, there may be a ghost in the room or a spirit. And scientifically, the reason is because they take the energy out of fast-moving molecules of air. Fast-moving molecules of air are warm. When you remove the energy of motion, they slow down, and slow-moving molecules of air are cooler. That's why you feel a cold spot, because that spirit is taking the energy out of the air molecule movement.
Hmm.
So those are just some examples of what I wrote about. Our dog Sprite actually sent us a butterfly right after he died, yellow and black butterfly. And it lingered around our dogs for about 20 minutes. They didn't touch it, which normally they would run after it, but they didn't. And it sat on the grass. Let me take a picture of it. And then the butterfly flew off. I wrote about it on my personal blog. And then two friends, a friend in Maryland and a friend in New Mexico, were reading my blog on their iPad different days of the week outside. And as they were reading about Sprite's butterfly, a yellow and black butterfly landed on each one of them when they were reading that blog about the butterfly.
Wow.
So they knew Sprite was actually paying them a visit.
Very interesting stuff. And you know, I can already see some of the comments coming in when folks listen to this here in the next half hour. You know, I think there's a lot of Santa theory here, Rob. People are wanting to believe or they don't. I'm sure you have much more experience with this than I. How do you go about convincing that naysayer that just says, oh, that's the human mind playing tricks on us. There's no way that this could be possible. You know, Rover, he died 12 years ago. How in the world could he come to visit me now after all these years? How do you try to convince these folks, or do you even attempt to do so?
I don't attempt to do so. I think that I tell people that it's always good to have an open mind. Skepticism is certainly healthy. You have to understand that we don't know everything. And
right.
That one thing I've learned in talking with people on the other side, either people or pets, is that there's no such thing as a coincidence. Anything you think is a coincidence is likely an influence by a spirit on the other side, whether human or animal.
Hmm.
That's the most important thing. And for people who tell me that they don't believe it, that's fine. I tell them that when they're on the other side, then they'll believe it.
Yes. Well, they don't have any choice at that point. They're just either going to have to live as that ghost trying to get to the other side, or they've made it somehow, and they're visiting their friends and family. I can only imagine what's going to happen that day. You know, you often hear all the stories about that passage over, whether it be seeing the light and you know, feeling this feeling or that. And you know, it's such a fascinating topic to me, because I firmly believe that they do stay in our lives, whether as a spirit or as a very profound memory. I still have those feelings, as you mentioned, every time, every now and then. And I've had a lot of pets in my life, and like I said, a lot of them just have that way with you. Before we go, Rob, I want to talk a little bit about your work with rescues. But before we do, how can folks get a hold of your book? I know you mentioned you're on Amazon. Do you have a direct website where folks can buy it right off without going through Amazon and that sort of thing?
Amazon is actually the best place to go to get it.
Okay.
But I do have a website. It's called Ghosts and Spirits insights.blogspot.com. And I'm also on Facebook as Rob Guttrow, author medium. You can find me there. And Twitter also as Ghost Medium Book. So there's a whole bunch of different places that you can find me.
Rob, if we can, I want to backtrack just a little bit. In your intro materials, you said that you're just now, you're still in the learning phase of this whole medium business. An important fact is that you don't charge for your services. And I think that's key, because there's so much, circus acts out there, if you will, of folks saying, yeah, we can read your mind, and you know, send us $20 or $5 a minute, and we can tell you everything you want to know. But I think that holds some credibility. Is you're not out to make a buck off of this, are you?
No, I'm not. Actually, the purpose of writing this book is to give you scientific proof and give you hope and comfort and ways to recognize how our pets and people will communicate with us from the other side, just as my dogs, my mom and dad, and a whole bunch of other people have communicated with me. I wrote it to give people hope and understanding, so they don't need to go to anybody.
Awesome. Well, Rob, we are out of time here on our live show, but I want to mention here that we'll be on the podcast about your rescue work. Tell us a little bit about that. What are you involved in, and how can people find out more about that?
Okay. I work with Dachshund and Weimaraner rescues here in the Washington, D.C. area, and we actually do fosters and transports, and we take dogs out of shelters. We rehabilitate them. That's what rescues do. And one important thing I just want to mention quickly is that every single rescue around the country needs foster families. And typically what that means is what you do is you give a dog or a cat a home until it can be adopted. And the rescue typically pays the medical costs. So all you have to do is pay for the food and give the dog shelter, love, and exercise. So I would encourage people to look into fostering.
And those two breeds there, the Weimaraner and the Dachshund, are those highly rescued breed? I don't know the exact term for that. But, you know, you obviously have a lot of labs and a lot of Siberians and a lot of golden retrievers in rescues. Is this a high rescued breed, these two here, or are they one of the few that don't get left behind a lot?
Dachshunds are typically a very highly rescued breed because they're smaller dogs. And a lot of smaller dogs will tend to nip. Dachshunds are not necessarily as great around children. And people think that because they're small, they're better around children. But it's important to understand the behavior of the dog before you adopt, which is why fostering is important. Weimaraners are great dogs, too. I love Weimaraners. They're very loyal, very intelligent, very affectionate, very obedient, and they're great companions. So both of them are great dogs. It depends on the personality you want. If you have a lot of energy and need exercise, Weimaraners are a great dog for that, too.
They are. I've trained several of both breeds, and I love the, you know, it's interesting that we're talking about the ghosts here, because often you'll hear the Weimaraner called the gray ghost, and I think that's kind of a parallel to what we're talking about. And I believe, is that a Weimaraner on your cover there? I just saw it on my iPhone. I didn't get a real good look at it. Is that a Weimaraner there?
It is. That is my dog, Buzz, that passed away as a puppy at 6 months old. He is
very cool.
Yeah, so he's on the cover.
Very cool. Rob, I appreciate the time. I wish we had longer to talk. Maybe we'll have you on again. I'm going to definitely get a copy of your book. This definitely fascinates me, and I'm interested to learn more. Thank you very much, and we'll make sure that we put all of the links to your sites as well as Amazon so folks can order up a copy for themselves, okay?
Thank you so much. I hope to come back, and have a nice evening.
Thank you. Rob Guttrow calling in. Pets and the Afterlife is his new book. Check it out. We'll make sure we pass on all the links. We'll talk to you guys next time. Goodbye.